Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Michael Footer.
And I'm Amanda Farrow.
On each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 103. Bobby Kotick got subpoenaed by the SEC. Let's go!
Man, I really wish that we could keep that energy going for everything else that's going on with Activision Blizzard right now.
Alas and alack.
Indeed. So, we are not going to talk about that first, however. But it is, in fact, at the top of the show, and Activision Blizzard rarely makes the top of the show.
Yep, but that's not where we're going to start today. So, we're gonna let you sit and simmer on that one like a yummy bowl of soup.
But this isn't yummy.
No, it's terrible.
That's terrible. All right. It's a bad bowl of soup.
We will get there. But first up, Twitch has put up its ass shield.
To cover it?
Yes, to cover it. Exactly.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's all not right. America's ass.
That's definitely not America's ass. So what is going on at Twitch?
So Twitch, the streaming market leader, has struck a deal with the National Music Publishers Association. I got that out. Those were words that actually came out of my mouth.
They fought to get there.
I tripped and stumbled. I Mr. Bean'd that. Anyway, you might recall that the NMPA was waging a very public war against Twitch.
Yes.
There was a lot of accusations. You know, none of them were actually inaccurate, it turns out, about how Twitch was being lax with copyright infringement on its service. Now, That resulted in a flood of DMCAs, and Twitch actually handling things really, really poorly with regard to creators.
Oh, they threw creators under the bus.
And just deleted stuff. And they're like, oh, you should just, the only way, the best way to deal with it is just, you know, if you're worried, you know, maybe delete everything you've ever created. That's fine. All your clips, all your VODs, that's fine. It's all good.
It's really not all good.
No, it was terrible.
That's like, clips and highlights and VODs is like, live or die for some creators, like especially if that's their full-time job.
Yeah, it's one of the many things that Twitch has just royally screwed up over the past couple of years. So the NMPA's deal with Twitch effectively creates an alternative reporting process to the DMCA, and the way it works is music labels will opt in, and of course why wouldn't they, because unlike a DMCA, which has to go through the process of the claim, and right. Then there's the opportunity to counterclaim.
Which is always a bad idea.
Most of the time, yeah. Most of the time, it's a real bad idea, and we'll talk about why in a second. The way this works is, it's a notification system. The NMPA and any labels that opt into it can say, hey, Twitch, that clip or that video on demand infringes on our music. Mm-hmm. It uses our music without permission. And then Twitch is like, okay. And then they just delete it.
They just delete it?
They just delete it. And they notify the creators like, hey, you did an oopsie no-no. So don't do that.
I have to imagine that the vast majority of the time that this is going to happen is because they probably have music playing in the background.
Well, an incidental, and I think what the idea here is that this will help in those cases where it's incidental. Like it's an IRL stream and they're outside and a car drives by playing music or something like that. Which, of course, no creator has intentionally done that. But then you have those intentional uses on top of it,
right,
which we'll get to in a second. But you'll get a warning, but your VOD or your clip will get deleted.
Without any warning.
No warning, no counterclaim. I mean, you get a warning as like, you shouldn't have done this, but you don't get a warning that it's going to happen. It just happens.
They just delete it. They don't give you the opportunity to download it.
No.
Cool.
No, it's terrible. No, there's no counterclaim system like the DMCA. So they said there's no copyright strikes for that incidental use that we were talking about, where if, let's say, you're an IRL streamer and someone drives by, or you're in an apartment and someone drives by really loudly blasting music, and that would infringe, even though that seems really silly, right?
A lot of this seems really silly, quite frankly. Like, I get it from a business perspective, and at the same time, this still does nothing to help creators, unlike Facebook?
We'll get there, because you're absolutely right. So flagrant use and flagrant violation, which is, hey, guess what? I'm going to purposely play this music on my stream. You know, that could actually carry a penalty, and you could get your account
suspended
or banned. Yeah, absolutely. So people saw this email come out and they're like, yeah, Twitch, yeah, finally making some changes. We can start using this music. And Noah Downs, who is a lawyer, stepped up. And I had this whole thread about like, wait a minute, hold on a second. This does nothing for creators. In fact, this could be really bad for creators.
Yeah, it's awful for creators.
Because it gives the NMPA a way in without protecting creators at all. It protects Twitch.
Yes.
Remember when I said that? Ass shield.
Yes. It is a large ass shield.
Yep. So the NMPA statement on this was a little bit of a victory lap. Remember, they had been very publicly upset at Twitch's handling of copyright infringement.
Sure.
They also still haven't convinced Twitch to cough up cash. But they do see this as a foot in the door. I think they are calling this a victory because if they can get them to do this, they can start leveraging them.
Start poking them in the direction they want them to go.
Yeah. So I mentioned Noah Downs. He shared some additional thoughts on Twitter. He actually had something that was a little hopeful here, suggesting that if opt-in is used widely by publishing companies, that it actually may open that door for a deal down the road, which would be good for creators, because then there's that way in like Facebook, which we covered on the show.
Yes, we did.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
So what was happening with Facebook gaming, and you all know that I have no love for Facebook, let alone Facebook
Well, especially gaming. After the stuff we just read from ProPublica right before we walked in here.
Yeah, that made me a little bit nauseous.
Where they have had low-paid third-party workers who have had access to people's Messenger accounts, and that some of these people, because they were paid so low and didn't care if they lost this job, were spying on people's Messenger accounts.
That's so gross.
It's super gross.
It's so nasty. Anyway.
Regulate Facebook is what I'm saying.
Anyway, I have no love for Facebook, but what they ended up doing with a number of major music publishing labels is they struck deals that protect creators on their platform. So if they do stream music of some kind, whether that's music in a video game or it's music from one of these labels or whatever, as long as it's protected under these deals, it's fine.
Yeah, which is really, really cool. But the way that happens is money on the table.
Money on the table, and though you have to sweeten the damn pot.
Now, I know that Amazon is not very big and they don't have a lot of resources. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, about that.
This is just pure penny pinching.
This is ridiculous.
Come on, Jeff Bezos.
Oh, he doesn't
get your shit together.
He doesn't give a shit. He doesn't even care about his own workers.
No, I don't think he even knows what Twitch is.
Probably not.
What's a Twitch?
How does one Twitch?
Yeah. So the NMPA... The NMPA is only one group you do need to deal with licensing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to deal with all the record labels as well.
Yes,
so there's music licensing, which I covered in my second book, The Game Dev Budgeting Handbook, is extremely complicated.
It's terrifying.
And it predates the video game industry. Like, this has been a thing. You've got mechanical licenses. You've got performance licenses. It's like...
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's truly, truly a monstrous beast.
Mm-hmm. But... This is really interesting. The benefits of us recording even later because of our bananas schedule, right?
Mm-hmm.
Twitch today announced that Warner Music Group, which I believe was one of the labels that signed with Facebook.
I believe so, yes.
They're joining the NMPA system. Remember, we said it was an opt-in system. And they are working toward a deal that will, quote, bring various recording artists to Twitch and create a standalone music space featuring premium music-centric programming.
That's really cool.
It is. But again, I want to caution here based around this language. Like, this is... Twitch says
this
more details
mean,
are going to be coming later.
This doesn't mean anything, really, for creators.
No, it means like, oh, guess what we're going to be able to do? We're going to have a way on Twitch to play this music, but not you, necessarily. Not you, creator. That doesn't mean you're going to get to play this music. It means that we're going to be able to put concerts on our service, perhaps. Again, do not assume that Twitch has your best interest in heart at heart, creators. And I'm not talking about the people who work at Twitch there are people who are doing really good work at Twitch.
Oh, there's plenty of great people at Twitch.
I'm talking about the people at the top of the organization
who make
both
these
at
decisions.
Twitch and then at Amazon. They do not have creators' interest at heart. That has been proven time and time again.
Yes. It's just gross. It's gross. As a little postscript to this story,
this was wild. This also hit today.
Yeah. You know, this is the benefit of recording on a Monday night at 8:00 Eastern.
Wap, 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 wap.
And by benefit, I mean Mike and I are exhausted.
Oh, yeah.
So, as a postscript, Roblox has settled a lawsuit filed by the NMPA for the same sorts of things it's mad at Twitch about. So, the Roblox settlement includes an opt-in for NMPA members to strike individual deals with Roblox for music licensing, but financial terms for this, not disclosed.
Yeah. So... it seems like the NMPA is scoring some victory points here. It's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Twitch is going to have to get on the payload.
Twitch is, yeah. Twitch is going to have to open its freaking wallet.
It seems very unlikely that Twitch is going to want to open up its wallet.
Here's the thing. Twitch is the market leader.
It is.
Facebook Gaming and YouTube, I believe, are both gaining traction.
As far as I know, yes.
And Twitch's failures, especially around the reasons that led to Twitch do better, the hate raids, the bot following stuff that's going on, and that happened to you while we were streaming on Saturday night.
I had 40 followers all at the same time. They were all bots, and that was really great.
And to be clear, I want to be clear. The hate rating
is not the same thing as being bots. It's not the same
thing as being bot followed. I think they spring from the same source, given the names and where the generation of these bots come from. But having a bunch of crappy bots follow you, which is bad news, right? It is really bad news, is not the same as being hate rated by a group of people and bots that are actively slinging racial slurs in your channel. Two very different things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can come at this from a place of immense privilege as a result.
Mm-hmm. And likewise, of course. So that is what's going on over at Twitch. But now I would ask that you sit down, buckle up, because we're going to dive into the Activision stuff. And there is a chunk. Manda did a huge amount of work getting ready. And then just as we were about to sit down, there was a piece of news that broke that has us both fuming just a little bit.
Yeah, normally we leave Activision Blizzard's nonsense for the bottom of the show.
It's usually right after Quick Hits.
Yeah, right after Quick Hits.
Now we got to do this, though.
But we're going to rip the Band-Aid off because this week's FAFO award required a bit of extra room. So let's dive in.
Yeah, so what's going on?
So, you know, we found out that the SEC is now investigating Activision Blizzard. And as we have discussed on this show a number of times, if the SEC is taking a look at your business practices and you've been naughty, mm-hmm. you're in deep doo-doo.
Yeah, it's really bad. The SEC carries a relatively large stick with regard to these things.
And they are not afraid to use their stick.
Yeah, the FCC, the FTC.
Not so much.
Well, we know the FTC, remember with the...
Toothless.
Toothless. The Counter-Strike GO settlements were absolutely absurd.
But the SEC does not mess around. As we discussed even just last week with regards to App Annie and everything that went on with the SEC's findings there, which was basically inside trading.
Yeah.
The SEC does not mess around.
No, they don't.
And if they find something, they're going to hit you with their big stick.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what happens with this.
So we don't have a ton of details right now about what's going on with the SEC. All we know is that CEO Bobby Kotick and several senior executives have been very specifically subpoenaed.
Yeah, it's a lot of C-suite people.
It's a lot of C-suite folks. Now, according to the Wall Street Journal, the agency is looking for very specific documents, including minutes from Activision Blizzard board meetings since 2019.
Yeah, that's still fairly recent.
It is recent. Personnel files from 6 former employees.
Now, I wonder if these are named offenders in the California suit.
And
so, Frassiani and Jesse McCree and other people.
I would imagine so. And not only that, they also want to see separation agreements from this year.
That's important. And the reason that's important, because if Activision gave them a golden parachute as it kicked them out of the plane, that actually reflects very, very poorly on Activision.
It really does. The SEC is also looking for communications from Kotick to other senior executives regarding complaints over sexual harassment and discrimination violations against not just employees, but also contractors.
So this is who knew what and when did they know it?
Exactly. According to the spokesperson from Activision Blizzard, they are cooperating with the subpoenas, of course. What the hell else are they going to do?
Well, with Activision Blizzard, who knows?
You never know.
Yeah.
Like, can I just like get something out
for
a quick second?
Yeah.
It feels, everything about this feels so criminal. Like, it feels criminal.
It feels like there was a cover-up.
It does. It really does. And this feels like that the senior executives at the C-suite would be the people encouraging others. This is some Enron shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I can see that angle. From my perspective, it is Activision has shown a willful disregard for the people that work at its studios and at its corporate organization, its publishing organizations.
Continuing to be extremely culturally irresponsible.
Absolutely. So if they can show, and this is, here's the interesting thing, if they can show that Bobby Kotick was aware and this continued, that would potentially give shareholders a reason to kick his ass out the door.
I'm really glad that you brought up shareholders. Okay. Because this is the next beat in the story.
Go for it.
So GamesIndustry.biz conducted an interview with SOC, now remember that's formerly CTW, mm-hmm. research director Richard Clayton about a number of things in the industry. So not just talking about Activision Blizzard, but also talking about things that are going on with Ubisoft and with EA.
I just want to say before we dive into this that, and I said this on Twitter as well, I really appreciate the work that SOC is doing around executive compensation. They may not, they represent shareholders, certainly. They probably don't represent shareholders with huge stakes in the company. But the
they're a banging, hell of a watchdog group.
Banging on the pots and pans like this is raising the visibility of these issues. And that is so important. Remember, absolutely. It wasn't until EA Spouse that we really understood
how bad it was.
About how bad Crunch was, right?
Yeah.
We need to keep talking about this. Crunch wasn't an issue until it became an issue that the public was aware of. So kudos to SOC for banging this drum, because this needs to be a regular conversation.
Absolutely. And it continues to be a regular conversation on this show. Every time that SOC sure. has something that they want to say, we talk about it. So yep. we have talked about the vast majority of what the SOC has said, mm-hmm. not just about EA and Ubisoft, but as well as Activision Blizzard. But one beat sure. in the story that we did not catch mm-hmm. from the beginning of August was that the SOC has called upon Activision Blizzard to undertake an equity review.
Interesting. Explain this, please.
So equity reviews are used to dig into corporate impact, both on employees, so that's the mm-hmm. internal structures, and the broader culture.
Oh.
So we've only seen a few publicly traded companies do this, including Starbucks, Airbnb, and Facebook. I believe that Uber was another one of those. Mm-hmm.
I think we actually did mention this. I don't think we called it
an equity review.
But putting it in that context is really important, because I do yes. recall us we've talked about so much since
we have.
The
I
story
didn't,
broke.
I did not remember us talking specifically about the equity review piece of this, mm-hmm. which is why it was really important that we called it out.
I just remembered us talking about Starbucks and Airbnb and Facebook and about the efforts that they've undergone, and SOC talking about mirroring some of that at Activision.
Right. So the equity review is the important piece of this.
Okay.
But what's even more interesting mm-hmm. is this. This is a chunky comment.
Okay, go for it.
But it's really, really great. And this is a comment that Clayton gave in this interview with GI.biz. So here we go. Quote, "It really gives a comprehensive view of how a company's structure and operations affect particular communities in the United States. A number of these have been civil rights or racial equity reviews where the focus is on understanding how company employment, sales, or lending practices, depending on the kind of company you're looking at, affect Black communities in particular, communities of color more broadly in the United States." The notion is that there's going to be a much more comprehensive and in-depth consideration of the company's operations, its policies, and practices than you would typically have in response to a shareholder resolution asking for a report from the board on a particular matter. So it's going to dig even deeper, right? It is a really, really, really deep dive. That's what these equity reviews are. They're not just from individual shareholders saying, "I need to see this."
Sure.
This is much more. So back into the quote, "This is a much more serious undertaking whose objective is to really get at the root of both how the company is operating and whether people from various different backgrounds within the company are being treated equitably, but also understand how the company's products and services are impacting communities out in the world separate from the internal issues of the company." It is a really, really sincere undertaking, and it requires a ton of effort.
I want to zoom in on that last statement, but also understand how the company's products and services are impacting communities out in the world is such an important thing, because part of the way that this can be interpreted and applied is looking at the toxicity that specifically exists in the communities of Activision Blizzard's games and what they are doing to combat that level of toxicity.
I think it goes even deeper than that. I think it's as a result of the internal culture. If you do not fire your toxic fans, if you do not take a stand, and I want to just say this real quick about Halo Infinite.
Thank you. I'm so glad you brought this up.
Because I saw this morning from, I believe, the community, the head community developer over at 343. And as he was saying, if you, you know, just to paraphrase, it was all, if you bring your toxicity into our game, we will dismiss you.
And beta counts.
And the beta count. Test flights count. The beta counts. It all counts. You mess up, you're gone.
Yep.
Fire your toxic fans.
Now, the challenge here is that unlike past Halo games, multiplayer is going to be free. So they're going to need to be really, they're going to have to figure out what to do about people getting banned and then making new accounts and then just downloading the multiplayer again.
IP bans.
Yeah, if it's possible. And those, I mean, that's, as you know, that is
I
a,
do.
It's a much easier thing to say than do, but if anybody can do it, Microsoft.
Of course, Microsoft.
And quite frankly, Twitch, if we're going to go back to this. I hate this nonsense.
Okay, we can't... but Twitch is also going to be rolling out some new tools.
And we'll talk about that when Twitch formally announces it.
Exactly. But according to...
But that doesn't stop people from creating hundreds of bot accounts.
Exactly. It's a really bad time, quite frankly. But if the technology exists en masse, it does.
Yep.
So at any rate, the calling out the toxicity, I think, is really important, especially when we're looking at the broader cultural impact, right?
Mm-hmm.
So equity review is something that the SOC is absolutely calling for. And they're also calling for an enormous change of the board of directors. There are 10 directors.
Yep.
Two of which are women. And one of those women is non-white. And that's also the only non-white person on the board.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of the men on this board have been serving for anywhere between 20 to 30 years.
Ew.
Kotick has been with Activision Blizzard for 30 years.
I know.
It's wild. And then, of course, there's the problems with executive compensation, right? And this is another really good quote that I picked out that Clayton said. Quote, Activision Blizzard is an example of a company where the case for at least temporarily connecting some measure indicator of workplace culture with the executive pay would be especially strong.
So just to make that clear for our listeners, what that means is... And we can talk about Ubisoft, even though they bailed on it after the
first year.
Oh, they
100% did.
Where there were issues, where they were like, oh, we're tying part of Eve's bonus to how well they do with diversity and equality. It's like, okay. But what they're saying here is get your shit together because you are financially incentivized to, or rather, we're going to hit you with the stick if you don't fucking do it.
Yes. Here is our big stick.
Yeah.
Would you like to be poked by?
And the board, here's the thing, and I want to talk about this. You've got a statement in here, right, about Activision's response, where it was like, oh, well, Bobby Kotick has, quote, delivered outside returns for the last three decades. And quite frankly, that is what Activision tries to do. They try to remind shareholders, like, you don't really want to get rid of Bobby Boom Boom.
Bobby Boom Boom.
You don't want Bobby Boom Boom. Bobby Boom Boom makes you money.
But how is that the point? This is not the point.
It is the point for a very specific audience. And let's look at Activision Blizzard's hires recently, those right-wing...
Except for their incoming chief people officer.
Sure. Because they had to.
Because they had to.
And it sucks. It sucks that they did this because they had to and not because they valued it. And I feel like they are doing the dance. They're doing the DEI dance. And I don't...
What sucks? And I said this at the beginning of this fucking debacle, is I talked about diversity, equity, and inclusion at Blizzard with their head of DEI.
Yeah.
Years ago.
Yeah.
I danced that dance. I danced it.
Here's the thing. You ask the questions, you were given the answers, and then this stuff comes out. It's like, you lied.
You lied. You straight up lied. You lied to me.
Either that, or you were hamstrung so badly that you had these great ideas and these great plans and you were ineffectual because the executives did not want it.
It's a number of things because it's just, they were two white women. They were really nice. I liked talking with them a lot, but considering how little value that Blizzard at large and Activision Blizzard at large placed on their non-male, non-white workers, I would imagine that they were just like, here's your cookie.
Yeah.
It fucking sucks. And I know I get so angry talking
about
this.
Well, you know the type, right?
I do.
Okay,
know the type.
We gotta do this, so. But here's the thing, if you're doing it because you gotta do it and not because those are your values, it's not gonna be successful.
DEI is not an initiative.
No.
It's not. It is cultural. You have to bake it into everything that you do. Every decision that you make has to be in service of diversity, equity, and inclusivity. It has to be.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, it's just performative garbage.
Yeah.
So anyway, Manda's rage aside, we'll get back to my rage in a second.
Oh, yeah.
So what is Activision doing exactly?
I would like to know this because it seems like what they've said is a lot of PR speak.
It is definitely a lot of PR speak, and it gets worse. So it turns out that they shared an IR update, so their investor relations update, about their, quote, workplace initiatives without actually going into much detail.
Of course not. It's the dance, right? We have to look like we're doing it. It's DEI theater.
I hate it. I hate it so much. So anyway, they're cooperating with all of the active investigations, including the SEC, of the U.S. Equal Opportunity
Commission. We'll get there.
Yeah. Love that for us. The National Labor Relations Board.
Which has also gone after them.
Yep. And the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing.
Which started has all this.
Big teeth.
See,
and
here's
a
the thing.
Big stick.
I hope they go for the jugular because I think they are the organization most that likely to grab this and hold on for dear life.
I hope so too. Well, and the worst part of this is that Kotick himself claims that they're working to make Activision Blizzard, quote, one of the best, most inclusive places to work anywhere.
He said that on the earnings call, and I nearly spit my water on my screen. Because it's like, you're full of crap.
Yeah, you're absolutely full of
it. You're working to do that. Since when? Since you got slapped with 3 lawsuits? That's not working to do it. That is scrambling to protect
that's
your bacon.
That's CYA.
It is.
It's classic.
Man, this whole top of the show is about ass covering.
It is. But, I mean, Twitch's ass shield is at least...
Well, they've had their own problems in the
past. They've had their own problems. Like, it's all fucking garbage. Yep. Anyway, the update only gives vagaries about what they're actually doing. So there's training, quote, exiting personnel.
I hated that. I saw that when it went, and I kind of went off on Twitter about that. This is like referring, when they had all their layoffs, referring to people as headcount.
Headcount and resources. And more compliance resources.
My
so that's
Bobby
what they're
Boom
doing.
Boom. I am a robot. I hate it. It makes me so angry.
It was really hard pulling this together because I was just so angry. So anyway, what does this mean for the company in reality? Well,
Bobby Boom Boom.
They can talk all they want, but we want details. They are a publicly traded company. We want details. Mm-hmm. Give us a report on what you're doing and let us hold you accountable. Instead of it being, oh, here's what we say we're doing, but you don't get more than that.
Yeah. In other words, Bobby Boom Boom, try to prestige at this. Oh, wait, you don't play video games. You probably don't know what that means.
Oh, yeah, no, that's really bad. Okay.
So you make this game called Call of Duty. It comes out every year.
Oh, that was bad. Even for you, that was bad.
What?
Call of Duty.
I didn't even mean it like that.
Oh, you didn't? I thought you did.
I wasn't talking about Bobby Boom Boom and his diaper.
Oh, no. I don't know if we can keep that.
Well, he keeps it in a jar.
That's terrible. Anyway, moving
on.
I'm
so mad about this, though. I'm really upset about this.
Oh, it gets worse.
It does.
It does get worse, but it's not going to get worse just yet. This is not great, but it's, you know, whatever. It is what it is. So, you know, speaking of exiting personnel, I was originally going to wrap up the conversation talking about employees that were leaving. These are not people that have been exited.
Mm-hmm.
These are people that are leaving.
And that we know of.
That we know of. But I have a feeling based on the comments from this first person that it was probably because she was done. So according
probably
to Game...
because of gestures broadly.
Gestures. According to Game Developer, and now remember Game Developer was formerly known as Gamasutra. So glad they changed that name.
Yeah.
Chief Legal Officer Claire Hart has departed the company after 3 years.
It's that Seinfeld gif of him in the theater and he's like, that's it. I'm out.
We're out. Yep. So this is what she had to say. Quote, the past 3 years have been full of unexpected twists and turns.
I wonder to which she is referring.
But I feel honored to have worked with and met so many great people at Blizzard and across the Activision Blizzard businesses. I'll be taking a short break before making my next move.
Yeah, that is, I don't care. I need to get out of here. I want nothing to do with you.
Yeah, that's putting a pretty hard stop on it. Now, this next one. So in addition to Hart's departure, the executive producer and development head on Overwatch 2... Chaco Sonny has left the company, and according to Blizzard, I believe, he's taking, quote, some time off after 5 years of service. The game, like, they're still saying the game's going to be fine. Narrator, the game is probably not going to be fine.
No, and it's interesting because
Blizzard is not fine.
Yeah.
None of this is fine. None of this is normal.
Well, and Diablo 2 launched with major problems this week. So that's a completely separate story. Now, the interesting thing is there was a story that popped up today about Overwatch 2 where someone noticed there was a video for Bastion's changes for Overwatch 2.
Oh, for everybody's favorite overpowered robot?
Well, he doesn't turn into a tank anymore, apparently. Regardless, the issue is there used to be like Jeff's Pizza Place or something like that. And they took the Jeff. They're starting to scrub all those real world references out. Well,
as they should.
As they should, because it's hubris.
Yeah, it is.
It's hubris. That is something, you know, when I used to report on, and when we talk about in-game things that happen after a beloved person has passed away, a member of the community, a developer who was you know, well-liked and loved and who wasn't an offender, you know, they get put in the game as a memorial.
Yeah.
That's great. But when you are putting your name in the game 20 times because you have such a giant ego.
And we're not saying this about Jeff Kaplan.
No, I'm talking like, about Afrasiabi.
Yeah, Afrasiabi, yes. But I from everything I understand about Jeff, he was an okay guy.
Yeah.
Or all is right. An okay guy, sorry.
So where does this story end 15 minutes ago for now? This is late breaking.
This is late breaking. This happened about an hour ago.
Not even. This is like, I'm seriously.
7:35 it happened. It is now 8:25.
Okay.
In a stunning, but also not stunning turn of events, literally hours after the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission sued Activision Blizzard, they have settled, wait for it, to commit to, keep waiting, an $18 million fund to, quote, compensate and make amends to eligible claimants.
Yeah. That number, by the way, that we have in the show notes. Activision had a net revenue of $8.1 billion last year and a net income, so profit, of $2.1 billion last year. $18 million is literally a drop in the bucket.
It's chump change.
It is.
And it's bullshit. And how does this even remotely help the families, the family of the woman who committed suicide?
It doesn't. And quite frankly, they're like, and if we don't spend it all, we'll give it to charities that advance
things.
So you're not even sure you're going to spend $18 million with reparations to the people who you've harmed? I'm sorry, but reparations should include back salary, bringing people back up to this. So let's say someone was at Activision Blizzard for 10 years. And they then determine that their pay was, let's say, 10 to 15 to 20% lower than a male colleague who entered at the same time and was on a similar trajectory.
Back pay.
They find out, exactly.
Back
you,
pay.
You see where I'm going with this. They're, like,
this should hurt.
This should hurt. This doesn't hurt. A settlement like this needs to be a deterrent from future behavior. And I'm sorry, this isn't a deterrent. This is them laughing.
This is not injunctive. This is not injunctive.
No, and this is laughter. Activision Blizzard going, $18 million? Our shareholders are going to do backflips over this. This is nothing.
It's bullshit. It's absolutely
bullshit.
I'm
so frustrated at this. And the EEOC should be ashamed. This is not protecting the people who were harmed. This is not making reparations in a way that is meaningful. Every single person of color, every woman who was paid less than male counterparts should be examining this. They should be figuring out what the average percentage is. They should be looking at how long they were there, and they should be bringing that salary through back pay up to a commensurate level. And I'm sorry, when you look at that,
at the very least,
when you look at that and you look at the volume of it, I don't know that $18 million covers that.
It doesn't.
But at the very least, it doesn't deter Activision Blizzard from doing this. They paid their way out of this for a song, and it is disgusting.
Well, hopefully the Department of Fair Employment and Housing has longer, sharper teeth.
Yep, and the SEC too. I hope that between the two of them, that this is the beginning. This is the crack in the dam before the flood comes, and I hope that the end of this is Bobby Kotick leaving the industry in disgrace.
I hope so too, quite frankly. The damage that the executives at this company have allowed to go on and proliferate under their watch, and it doesn't matter. The buck stops with Kotick.
Yep. And I think that's what the SEC is hoping to prove, quite frankly.
The buck stops with Kotick. It doesn't matter if he was personally involved in the allegations or the harassment, he is responsible as much as
And let's not forget, he was in Jeffrey Epstein's black
That's
book.
Just so gross. That's the grossest thing I've... Oh my God, I hate that. I hate that so very much. So anyway, it is an ongoing fucking saga at Activision Blizzard. Pardon my language today. I don't normally swear on this podcast.
I had a bang rainbow unicorn today, so I'm feisty.
I understood this reference. I have not had any energy drinks today. I've had half a cup of coffee. And I... Yeah, today's... Yep. It has not been great. So, we are going to leave the saga of Activision Blizzard's...
For a few days, anyway.
...fuckery until we are able to pick it back up again when we see more updates. Likely, we will have more updates by the end of the week. Mike and I... Okay, just to, like, full disclosure, Mike and I are working on a really messed up schedule right now. So, Mondays... Monday today, Monday next week, that's what our schedule looks like. It's just we can record when we can record.
Yeah, just bear with us, please. But now, it's time for Investment Interlude, where we talk about M&A, SPACs, and other kinds of investment in game companies around the world.
It's true. And today, it's actually not a huge...
We have three.
Like, it's three stories. I don't even know what to do with this.
I think everybody's taking a little snoozle.
You know what? Well earned.
Yeah.
Well earned.
Now, and to be clear, you know, we made this decision where it's like, I don't think we really want to cover NFT stories anymore. I don't think we really want to cover crypto stories. It's harming the environment. And NFTs are a scam, man.
They're bad, actually.
They're bad, actually. So unless there is a really, really compelling reason, we're not going to be covering...
Like when the IGDA came out with their statement.
Right. I mean, and I think that's important. Know that they're out there. Know that people are trying to make fetch happen. we're not gonna play ball with that.
We are not in fact going to make fetch happen. So Mike, take us through our first two investment interlude stories.
Sure. Russia's Mike.games has announced the acquisition of Mamboo Games, a hyper casual publisher based in Minsk, Belarus. And every time I think of Minsk, I think of Get Smart with Steve Carell.
That's what you think of?
Yes. You think of Minsk and Boo.
I think of the giant miniature space hamster.
That's fair, too.
Steve Go Carell, for the eyes, Boo!
Steve Carell is a giant miniature space hamster. It's true.
No, he's daddy AF these days.
I have no comments on this. The deal is worth $2 million up front, as well as an undisclosed earnout based on performance. Mamboo was founded in 2020 and currently employs 35 people. It released a number of games, including Shift Race, which hit 15 million installs in its first 3 months, Whoa. And Billion Builders, which reached the top 50 on iOS and the top 10 in China.
Wow.
What's next?
I don't know. You tell me. What's next?
Oh, I get to do this one too?
You get to do this one too. I went through a big, long story. I need a sec.
Okay, that's fine. former EA DICE lead producer Tatiana Dishlova and design director Max Spielberg have formed FuzzyBot.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a really nice name.
I like it. FuzzyBot.
FuzzyBot.
FuzzyBot. They've secured $3.5 million in a seed funding round led by Bitcraft Ventures, Sisu Games Ventures, and 1UP Ventures also participated. The funding will be used for the studio's first project, a, quote, cooperative game that blends combat and progression elements of roguelite and life sim genres.
My ears perked up at that last one.
I
know, right?
That's, I thought you might find that interesting.
That's very interesting. This is also very interesting. Stream Elements has raised $100 million in funding, which will be used to continue building out the tools that it provides to content creators.
Hmm.
So Stream Elements is currently being used by 1.1 million people, including the two people on this podcast.
Absolutely.
We use it for virtual economy,
mm-hmm.
and Mike uses it for his stream.
Yes.
I use Streamlabs on mine.
Mm-hmm.
So Stream Elements provides tools for content creators to create alerts, overlays, sounds, and other tidbits that are useful to personalize a stream or a YouTube video. There are some executive shakeups in addition to this $100 million round of funding. Co-founder Gil Hirsch is stepping into the CEO role. Co-founder Doran Neer, who had been CEO, is moving over to president. The two other co-founders are staying put in their current roles. I had no information on those roles, so I just was like, okay, that's fine. With Yuval Tal stepping into CEO, Jason Krebs as CBO. I had to look this one up. I was like, what is a CBO? Cheddar bacon and...
Omelette. It's a cheddar bacon omelette.
Cheddar bacon omelette? All mm-hmm. right, cool. But it's actually a chief brand officer. And Udi Hoffman as CFO.
So just real quick, Yuval Tal is becoming the COO.
Yes.
Okay. I think you said CEO again.
I said COO.
Oh, my mistake. I just misheard.
Yeah. The CO, I understand. Because it... No, it's because of my... It's my weird bastardized accent these days.
Oh, your Canadian Jersey accent.
I'm so upset by it.
Well, so you can be upset as we take a break.
Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative. And along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz. And we're back. Mike, what time is it?
It's time for Quick Hits.
I'm so excited for when we actually are able to
start. So people can see your jazz hands.
So I could do jazz hands every time. Mike, what's up first?
Rovio is opening a new studio in Toronto. Ooh. The Angry Birds developer has hired Julie Beaugrand, formerly vice president of Gameloft's North American Studios, to lead the team.
Nice.
The new location will focus on casual mobile games and expand existing Rovio offerings from its other teams.
Amazing. Sumo Digital has also announced a new team. Its Bangalore studio is the second in India, joining its Pune location. The team will be led by Stuart Neal, who was studio director for Sumo Sheffield during Sackboy: A Big Adventure's development, and he's been in the industry for 22 years. Sumo Pune is also going to be growing, with 70 new employees to be recruited. Discord is starting to test YouTube integration just weeks after YouTube forced two popular music bots offline.
Wah, wah.
This new feature is called Watch Together and allows Discord members to, well, watch YouTube videos together. Okay. I mean, you can ultimately just stream your screen, but this allows users to put together YouTube playlists in the app and watch them together.
Okay.
So you can just, like, copy and paste YouTube videos into a Watch Together thing.
Interesting.
And then it starts compiling playlists.
Oh, okay, cool.
Which is neat. It's not identical to Groovy or Rhythm. Those are the Discord music bots that were taken offline, but it's close enough. But the worst part, and this is the reason why they had to work directly with YouTube, is because you'll get ads.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah, don't love that.
All right, speaking of not good.
Oh, this is so annoying and so angering.
And I actually, so this is another legal story, and I actually reached out to Brandon Huffman about this. Love Brandon. Thank you, Brandon. Love you, smooches. Quantic Dream founders Guillaume de Fondomier and David Cage, the soft talker, have won a libel case against Le Monde following...
Low talker.
No, seriously, I interviewed him before Beyond Two Souls, I think.
I remember you telling me
that.
Yeah,
I went to Tribeca Music Film Festival.
I love the Tribeca
and,
Film Festival.
They showed some of the game and I got to interview David Cage. And my recorder, my poor recorder, like, he's a very low talker. And I had to keep leaning in and pushing my recorder closer and closer and closer. It was the hardest interview to transcribe.
I bet.
Anyway, David Cage, emotion. So they've won a libel case against Le Monde following that publication, the publication of that story that included allegations against the studio for sexual harassment, that photoshopped nude that we talked about, and other toxic workplace issues. There were two other outlets that were involved in the story. Mediapart was cleared in the libel case, and Canard PC was not even involved in the suit. So there were three outlets that reported. It was a huge story.
It was enormous, right? Yeah.
So the Court of Appeals in France ruled that none of the photoshopped images of the plaintiff were degrading, homophobic, or racist.
What? It doesn't matter. They photoshopped... Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Hold on. So the studio itself has not won a case. It's just the two co-founders, because it was originally being reported that Quantic Dream won the case. So the question is, how did Quantic Dream win? This is going to make your head spin, because in North America, this works a lot differently. Le Monde was asked to prove pieces of its story, like produce evidence, right? But that would have exposed its anonymous sources.
Yeah.
And they decided that they would not. They would not compromise the anonymity. They would not compromise their sources. And therefore, the courts are like, well, you can't prove it to us. So I talked, I asked Brandon real quick, and he just gave me a little bit here. Sorry, I'm just looking this up. I had it, and then the thing closed, and here we go. Okay. So his gut reaction was just that French laws are very different from the U.S., Libel in the U.S. requires a false statement of fact, harm, and a degree of fault.
Yes.
And the degree of fault for a public figure is actual malice, which doesn't mean intent, more reckless disregard for the truth. So if they, so in the U.S., if the story had been reported and journalistic practices were followed, like they got multiple sources and they really, they double checked every, like they did everything they would need to do, it would have been very difficult for a company to prove that. Additionally, I asked him, like, you know, is this a slap suit where...
Oh, you need to explain that then. If you're going to talk about slap suits, you can't...
I can never remember exactly what that stands for, and it's really simple, and I forget all the time. All right, I'm looking it up.
It's just like when we have to deal with SPACs, and we're just like, how SPAC?
Slap. Strategic lawsuits against public participation. So the way slap suits work is that you're a big, big, big company, or you're a rich person with a lot of money, and somebody says something about you that you don't like, so you sue them.
Oh, right. We did talk about this. I remember now. Oh, right. Yeah. With that person. Right.
You'll have to remind me which person we're talking about.
Oh, well, the person that has had other people in the industry trying to prove that he is not at fault.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, crap. Yes. I know who you're talking about. We're not talking about that
on the
show.
We're not talking about it on the show.
No, we're not talking about that on the show.
No.
So it's a strategic lawsuit against public participation. So what you do is you file a lawsuit and essentially you try to bully someone into not talking about things that actually happened.
Yeah.
So I asked Brendan, you know, is this a slap suit? Like,
Is this
a French slap suit? And what he said was whether it's a slap suit, what it would be considered one in the United States would depend on the state where it was filed. And many states don't have anti-slap at all.
And weird.
Because they didn't file in the states, it's really hard to say. It was just a curiosity that I had about this case. So that's that.
Cool beans.
Also, I think the French approach to that is garbage. You have to break journalistic practice. You have to out anonymous sources who trusted you in order to win a lawsuit. That is putting a media outlet in a terrible situation.
That's awful.
It is.
That's a truly awful thing.
So I'm just going to say to the two co-founders, Guillaume de Fondomier and David Cage, that's shitty, bro.
It's real shitty.
My emotions about that are not suitable for the show. Emotion.
I understood this reference. I'm understanding a lot of references tonight. That's not always the case. All right, let's talk about Yuki.
Yep.
So outgoing Yuki chair Stuart Dinsey. Also, when I originally I read it as Disney,
me
and I'm like, wait, what? Shared some warnings about loot boxes as he was welcoming in the new board. So Dinsey has warned that the global action or inaction by the biggest games publishers who have profited off of loot boxes the most over the years, we're looking at you, EA, is going to set the stage for the future of transparency and for loot boxes themselves.
Yeah.
Now, they are being, in Dinsey's opinion, rightly challenged. And this is a quote directly from his Twitter thread. Quote, I hope the issue is resolved with common sense and consumer protections improved.
It's true. It's time for us... There is a hungry audience for service-based games.
Service-based games are honestly, if we talk about inclusivity, right? Mm-hmm. And we try to look at as much of this industry as we can through the lens of DEI. Service-based games means that for the most part, you're paying once.
Yep.
And you just play the game. That's your game, right? That is the world that we live in. We have games that are... People only have like one or two games that they play a year because they're big, they're service-based. Mm-hmm. It keeps them interested. It keeps them active. You know, it keeps them engaged. And what is engagement? Paramount,
yep,
right?
Absolutely.
If we look at the way analytics work, engagement is near the top of the list. We love to see great daily and monthly active users.
And done in such a way that is consumer-friendly, ethical, considerate of both time and money.
Yeah, again,
all of these things. So, respect players and you will win them forever.
For sure, absolutely. And that's why people for a number of different reasons have like their game.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
So service-based games are great. Embrace service-based games, enjoy them. But developers and especially publishers have a responsibility to take care of their player base.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And loot boxes, especially if they're not transparent, are not responsible.
I agree.
And we already have that hard line here.
Right.
So.
Yep. Absolutely. So that was it.
That's it. That's all we got for Quick Hits. I don't know what's happening this week.
We've been so busy. I don't think I missed a lot of stuff, but you know what? And those were Quick Hits.
And now I get to talk about fashion.
You do. I'm so excited for you to talk about the story. All right. We are kicking off. A lot of us, I'm sure a lot of listeners saw this, or that Epic has announced a partnership between Fortnite.
Yes.
And Balenciaga.
Exactly.
Amanda, for those of us who live in the gaming side of things and not the fashion side of things, you have a foot in both worlds.
I mean, I don't really have a foot in that
world. You are aware. Okay. What's your Bible?
September's Vogue.
Yeah, there we go.
Damn it.
Amanda, which byline are you most proud of?
My Teen Vogue byline. That's not really true. My Washington Post byline is also...
I know.
I'm honestly proud of all my bylines, but... When I was asked to write something for Teen Vogue, the little teenage Amanda inside of me went, "Oh!" Yeah.
So for our listeners who are not at all steeped in the fashion world, can you talk a little bit about what Balenciaga is?
So Balenciaga is a legendary luxury fashion house. Okay. So they participate in all of the major fashion shows around the world. They are considered also a couture house. Mm-hmm.
Can you explain for our listeners who may not know what couture is?
Yeah, sure. So couture is the upper echelon of fashion. It is handmade, hand-stitched, hand-sewn, hand-everything, which means it is extremely expensive.
Sure.
And these are dresses, garments, whatever, that are usually made for a single person. That is couture.
Got it.
And these dresses, these garments are usually used only on the runway. To express whatever creatively is going on at the moment, whatever the cultural climate looks like. And for Balenciaga in particular, they are exceptionally fashion forward and they are constantly on the bleeding edge of what style is. It's them and it is, for a long time it was Versace. It isn't Versace anymore. That starts with an M. Moschino. Moschino's the other one. So it's Balenciaga and Moschino constantly pushing the boundaries of what fashion is.
Okay. And I think what people who are listening to this show might have seen was it was either a polo shirt or an Oxford with the Fortnite name stitched, and it was $1,000.
It's $1,000.
All right.
So we're not going to...
Can you put that in context, please? Because I think when you explained it to me, like, it was really, really interesting. And I'm so glad we're having this conversation.
So before we hop into the conversation around who the physical apparel is actually for... Let's talk about the digital stuff.
Because okay,
that's
great.
The stuff that's really like business focused.
Okay, let's do it.
So to be clear, Epic announced this collaboration between Fortnite and Balenciaga. So there will be a digital apparel set for four popular Fortnite avatars, including Doggo, Ramirez, Knight, and Banshee.
Okay.
As well as an in-game store that will serve as a lookbook for physical apparel.
All right. Now, explain what a lookbook is.
Oh, God. Okay, so a lookbook is normally something that is sent out to prospective buyers.
Okay.
It takes you through all of the various different pieces and the ways in which they can be worn, the ways in which they can be showed at stores, and the ways in which consumers can interact with them.
Very cool.
So lookbooks are super important for pretty much any fashion line. I get lookbooks in from an embarrassing amount of places these days. Because I do love style and I do love fashion.
So this collaboration between Epic and Balenciaga, it didn't start with Fortnite.
No, it actually ended up starting off with Balenciaga's first foray into gaming. And that was using the Unreal Engine. So this is according to a statement from Balenciaga. It started with our first video game, Afterworld, which we built using Unreal Engine to debut our fall 2021 collection. From there, we have continued to be inspired by the creativity of Unreal and Fortnite communities. It made total sense to me that we continue collaborating further by creating these authentic Balenciaga looks for Fortnite and a new physical Fortnite clothing series for our stores.
Okay, let's talk about that Fortnite clothing series.
So the clothing series for the stores.
Like, should I expect to see one under the Christmas tree?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
So.
Because I'm chunky?
Well, okay, darling, I would never describe you like that, but you are not considered sample size, and neither am I, quite frankly.
I know that a lot of these fashion, like, one of the challenges with fashion is not, a lot of them are not size inclusive.
most, in fact, are not size inclusive. They're getting better as the years go by. But because there were these legendary figures like Karl Lagerfeld, who was part of Chanel for a long time, he was notoriously fat phobic, did not like any of the models walking his shows with Chanel to be anything over a size two.
Oof.
Preferred zeros and double zeros, quite frankly.
Yikes, that's wild.
We don't body shame on this show.
No, not body shame. It's just like, but I worry about health.
Sure. And I mean, listen, but we have a skinny mini in our household too, right? True. Our tiny little creature who is very tall for her age and very willowy. So she is going to grow up and be tall and skinny as well. So let's talk about what this means in the broader context.
Yeah, because this is your particular expertise and your passion for fashion, as it were.
Passion for fashion. I love that for
me. Makes this a very interesting take on this story. Now, you've covered fashion before.
Yep.
You talked about the business of cosplay.
Yep.
This is your beat. Like, this is one of your beats.
It's one of my beats, yeah.
And
so ask me questions. What are you curious about?
What is the benefit to Fortnite for this?
Visibility.
Okay.
And quite frankly, cachet. If Balenciaga is paying enough, and this isn't just about Fortnite, this is also about the League of Legends and Louis Vuitton collaboration that happened several years ago. So Riot was already walking down this path. And with all of the stylishness around KDA, you know, the K-pop group that sings all those adorable songs that I enjoy blasting in the car when we go driving around. They were blazing that trail first. Many fashion houses used to be stuck in the past. Many of them used to be stuck in the past, especially the Italian houses. And they do things a certain way for a long time. They're opening up. They are opening up not just to collaborations with video games, but collaborations with influencers, collaborations with upcoming street artists. With fashion is opening up.
Do you think this has any metaversal impact?
I think that introducing fashion in game is going to wake people up to what fashion could be in real life. Now, remember that fashion is personal expression, right? And the big problem here is there is that disconnect between your core group of gamers, and these are usually going to be kids, and they're going to be people in their 20s and 30s, that don't have they don't have $1,000 to spend on a polo shirt. So we come full circle back to the conversation of who is this for? This is for influencers.
Okay.
These are for the people that are going to be seen wearing this clothing. And they want to, and that's what a lot of luxury fashion is. It's about the prestige. It's about the I own X from this fashion house.
Yeah. I would rather see someone tout about owning a Balenciaga shirt than owning an NFT, quite frankly.
Okay. I have always subscribed to this.
I know you have.
I always have. So the importance of this kind of collaboration continuing is about creating more serious conversations about gaming as art. Fashion is art. It's wearable art, but it is art nonetheless. And seeing those worlds collide like this, it gives me a lot of hope that more very old art is taking note of the importance, the cultural importance of what gaming is and what it is going to become.
This is super interesting, and I hope we continue to see more of this. Simply because I'm all about casting a wider net with gaming. And we have been talking about the center, right? We talk about the core. And we have talked a lot about on this show about expanding the access. This is another perspective on bringing gaming to new audiences. But also further, I don't feel like we need to have the conversation about legitimizing gaming anymore. It is an enormous industry. No. It's bigger than the movie industry.
It is. But we do have to have the conversation around other art forms taking it seriously.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it.
So this is a step in the right direction. Now, don't get me wrong. Luxury fashion is, I could have, in fact, if you would like to talk about sustainability and luxury fashion, you can find me on Twitter and we can have that conversation mm-hmm. about full cycle sustainability and what luxury fashion houses are doing right and what they're doing wrong.
And what fast fashion is doing to the environment.
And what fast fashion is doing to the environment as well. In fact, if you really do care about the intersection of business and fashion, you should start reading Vogue Business. It is the best coverage in the industry, in the fashion industry, that really dives deep into things like ethics, sustainability, talking about new business models. They did, in fact, talk about the Balenciaga Fortnite collaboration as something really interesting to keep your eye on as well.
And you were showing me, was it the September issue or was it the August issue of Vogue, where Anna Wintour is where she is and continues to be where she is because she is not rigid.
No, she's shrewd.
Yeah, she really is.
She's shrewd. It was the September issue. It was, you know, an opening. Again, we're talking about fashion opening, and fashion really is opening up. There are more people that are involved with fashion that were traditionally sent to sewing houses mm-hmm. to, no, you make the clothes. We white people design the clothes. You sew them. They did a whole thing about the garment district in New York and in Manhattan that I just loved. I loved being able to see all of these different perspectives. Anna's leaning in, and it is, if Anna's leaning in, the industry leans.
Yep. And that's great. And she's using her power and her platform for good because she's leaning into social awareness.
She really is. And they've been doing that now for the last, I think, 18 months with the advent of everything that happened at the beginning of the pandemic, because they are, Condé Nast is in New York. Mm-hmm. If they're in Manhattan, they're in the new World Trade Center building. Yeah. And they were like the heart of the pandemic's biggest issues were in New York at the very beginning.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, if Anna is leaning in, the rest of the fashion industry will follow her because she is not only the tastemaker, but she is the industry leader.
Mm. All right. Well, that was a cool story about Epic.
That was a cool story about Epic. Yes. Yeah. Thank you for letting me talk about something that I really am so passionate about.
Of course.
About.
Of course. It's really interesting stuff. All right. We have one more thing this week. It's this week's Fuck Around and Find Out Award. Each week, we'll pick the person or company in the game industry that has tended their garden from small seeds of fucking around to a sequoia-sized tree of finding out.
Now, the reason why Activision Blizzard is not our winner of this week's Fuck Around and Find Out Award is because they literally did not find out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that makes me very angry.
We would have rewritten the show notes in a heartbeat if that had been more than
$18
a tickle on the wrist.
$18 billion. Yeah. $18 billion, they would have won the Fuck Around and Found Out Award this week.
But let's see, who is it? Oh, a little company called Epic Games.
I've never heard of them before.
Winner of this week's Fuck Around and Find Out Award. See, Epic has asked Apple to reinstate its developer accounts and allow Fortnite back on the App Store. In an email posted by Epic CEO Tim Sweeney on Twitter, Epic informed Apple that it was ready to play ball, remove alternative payment processing, and has paid Apple $6 million as ordered by the court. As part of that settlement, right?
Right, I remember
the settlement that Epic is appealing. Hold that in your little head.
I'm sorry, my head is not that little.
I wasn't talking to you, I was talking to our listeners. Hold it in your little head.
Your beautiful head.
Your beautiful heads. Epic says that it's willing to do this, provided that Apple is willing to allow Epic to put alternate payment buttons and links in accordance with what Epic says is, quote, the plain language of the court order. Although there is a lot of debate about what Judge Gonzalez-Rogers said, YGR Gonzalez-Rogers said about buttons. Like, that's the whole big thing. Like, what does she mean by buttons? Buttons.
We're not sure.
So
YGR will tell us.
So, in his email to App Store leader Phil Schiller at Apple, says that if Apple complies, quote, our remaining dispute will be about competing stores. And I genuinely believe we could find common ground on the topic if Apple's position were based solely on user security and privacy rather than commercial interests. Now, remember, YGR said, you're both in this for money. Stop playing around.
Yeah, stop trying to say this is something it isn't.
And Tim Sweeney's like, well, your whole thing about security and privacy is nonsense because you're really interested in commercial interests. Apple did not respond, in fact, to Epic. But its law firm did.
What did they have to say?
Hell no! All right, I'm reading this whole quote because the quote is just...
It's so legally delicious and messed up.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Frosted legalese. It's magically delicious. All right, quote. I am responding to your recent request that Apple reinstate Epic's developer program account, which was terminated for cause last year. Epic committed an intentional breach of contract and breach of trust by concealing code from Apple and making related misrepresentations and omissions. In its decision, the court recognized that, quote, Apple had contractual rights to act as it did. Following that decision, Mr. Sweeney has publicly said that Epic, quote, wouldn't trade an alternative payment system away to get Fortnite back on iOS. In light of this and other statements since the court's decision, coupled with Epic's duplicitous conduct in the past, Apple has exercised its discretion not to reinstate Epic's developer program account at this time. Furthermore, Apple will not consider any further requests for reinstatement until the district court's judgment becomes final and non-appealable. We are looking at potentially 5 years. 5 years. If Epic continues to appeal.
This isn't about the little guy.
No,
this isn't about the little guy.
No, it isn't. And again, we've talked about this. I really think the Among Us imposters thing.
I keep coming back to it. I keep coming back to how dirty they did the Inner Sloth devs. These are good humans. That is a group of really cool humans that are just doing their best to make an awesome little game awesome. You know? And yes, we are biased because our friend and friend of the show, Victoria Tran, is working over there now as their marketing director.
But also, they are one of the most wonderful success stories, turnaround stories. You know, we talk about great recovery stories in the game industry, Final Fantasy XIV. I will mention it because it is true, even though it guts me a little bit, Diablo III.
I know.
But that Among Us, which was out for 2 years... 2 years before it became popular.
And it became popular because what?
Influencers.
Content creators, content more creators, specifically. Yeah.
Well, that's a whole different story that we are not going to address today, but hit me up if
there's stuff always happening. And Mike and I can't always talk about it on this show. But you know what we can talk about?
What can we talk about, Amanda?
We can talk about the fact that we are done the show!
We did this in about an hour. This is good. This is our shortest show in a while, and I am so glad because... Because we hit everything. We hit everything.
Yeah.
It was full of emotion.
There was even joy in there. There was joy, there was anger, there was rage, there was sad, there was
the full
upset.
Range of emotions.
And then there was a lot of really, there was excited Amanda talking about fashion.
I'm pretty happy with this show. We hope you're pretty happy with this show.
So thank you so much for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast. I'm at Amanda Farrow.
And I am at Footerish, FUTTERISH. You can also subscribe to our RSS feed at virtualeconcast.com. You can listen to us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Cast. There's one more.
Pocket Cast.
Oh, right in the face.
Got him.
Please do subscribe, and if possible, review the show. Let us know what you think.
You can also DM us with questions. More specifically, you can at me with questions, specifically about sustainable fashion and luxury fashion houses. I would love to talk about all of that. I did a lot of deep dive into that because I wasn't sure if I was going to like move over to like fashion as my full-time beat. I didn't, obviously, but I was considering it. So anyway, you can DM us with questions at virtualeconcast, or you can send them to us at podcast@fsquared.biz. If you have super secret information for us, you can get at us on Twitter for our signal numbers, and you can talk to either of us or both of us. You can also send us questions on, like, Discord.
Yeah, you can join our Discord community.
It's a small, cozy community.
It's wonderful. I love our community.
Our community is so nice. It's full of, like, really lovely people.
Yeah, DM us, either of us, for an invite, and we'd be glad to supply that to you. If you're interested in supporting the show, if you like us a lot... we are still trying to work towards...
We say this
slowly
every
slowly but surely. We would really love to do weekly transcriptions. They're not inexpensive. And it's a bigger burden for a show that doesn't make any money.
Yeah, we don't make money off this podcast.
No,
we do this
we do
for
not.
The love of it.
We do. If you're interested in supporting us, we do have a Ko-fi link. That's ko-fi.com/virtual economy.
And we'll be back...
some point. Next week, maybe Monday?
Maybe Monday. It might not be Monday. It might be Tuesday.
Yeah.
It really depends on how utterly wrecked we're going to be as a result of our weekend, which is band, 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 and then more band.
Yes.
But then we...
Yeah.
Then minimal band. Listen, the things we do for our children.
Yes.
And we do have so very many of them. Yes. So we will be back next week, probably Tuesday, I would imagine. So remember to wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We will see you at some point next week.